the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast is just two guys and maybe a guest or two discussing Bitcoin, Bitcoin equities, and the related macroeconomic space. It's not meant to be financial advice, so please, if you're doing any investing after listening to our program, do your own research, do your own due diligence, and understand that any money you invest can be lost. The show is meant for entertainment purposes only, and we hope you enjoy the program. Friends and enemies, welcome to another episode of the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast. Len, I'm in a new venue here tonight, a room in my basement. I'm trying to take a page out of your book here. I've been relegated to a place where I can at least put some books and pictures up that, you know, are my own, even though these ones are not. These are like 90s pop stars. I don't know if you can see. Maybe I'll show you.
No, I can't. I'd have to zoom in after and really examine this stuff.
Yeah, behind me, I have, let me see. I see Gwen Stefani over there. Mm-hmm. I got, who is that? Lenny Kravitz, maybe? And then Alanis Morissette behind me. Good Canadian, at least, in the middle.
I have Wojak above my head.
who's got more number one records? I don't know.
We're in great company. So, yeah, this is good. You're moving into a different area of your palatial estate. So this is wonderful. We are moving on up, ladies and gentlemen. We are moving on up.
That's right. So, I'm in the Satoshi wing now. So, buddy, we before we get started, let's talk about our sponsor, ShakePay, best place for Canadians to buy and never sell Bitcoin. Couple things got going on. They got Shake Squads, which they just added. You and a couple of your buddies or people you barely know that you met online can shop together on your CAD balance, get 42 sats per purchase per person, which is great. I've seen some people rack up like 1,000 sat days just going bananas on their card. So if you're going to the mall and you want to spend a bunch of money, your time preference is feeling a little shaky, at least use your ShakePay card, get a little bit of sats, get a few sats out of it. You also got the Shake Paid. Sometimes you spend off your CAD balance, they just link you the whole purchase in Satoshis. It ain't a bad way to add to your stack. They also got the cashback card, which is actually sats back. I'll never probably shake that habit, Len. I think everyone's going to say cashback for at least another year.
No.
So the you say it already? Good for you. I'm fucking Bitcoin way behind back. On that. I'm way behind on that. So the sats back card, it's 2% on the first 5,000 you spend, 1% after that. Can't beat it. And then finally, Len, shaking sats. Use our promo code, Charlie Beta Peter, CBP, to sign up for ShakePay if you haven't already. I can't imagine there's anyone listening to this show who hasn't signed up for ShakePay already. But if you haven't, use the code, shake your phone every day. After a year, 1,000 sats per day, as long as you don't forget. So make sure you wake and shake. What's next?
Well, what are you going to do with that Bitcoin? Might as well put some of that onto Ledin and earn some interest as a result. So open up an account using our referral code below. And if you fund your account with 150,000 Satoshis or 75 USDC, keep it on their platform for 15 consecutive days, and you're going to be awarded with 10 USDC. And if you need money, you got to repair your car, you got to fill it up with gas, buy groceries, whatever the heck you got to do, and you need to borrow against your Bitcoin, Ledin is there to help you out. 50% loan to value, you're good to go. And if you think the price of Bitcoin is going up, and I've been talking about it for a while, it did go up, although it's not showing my block clock right now, but it was a little bit higher when it was showing. You could use B2X, double up your Bitcoin stack. And when the price is high enough, don't be an Elon. You pull out and you're good to go. And you have more Bitcoin on your stack simply by timing the market and using B2X. The last thing they have is the Bitcoin backed mortgages and industry first. Check their website to see where they are offering the Bitcoin-backed mortgages, not available in every jurisdiction. Also check their website for the rates for the savings and the borrowing, because this changes on a month-to-month basis.
Can't beat it. I was not paying attention there, I'll be honest. Did you say the proof of reserves thing just released?
We will be talking about that in this show. So that's going to be
okay.
An item that will be, so we're not going to put it at the front. We'll be talking about it in the middle part.
No problem. Before we get started, before we even go to the price of Bitcoin, Len, we should talk about Saturday. Yeah?
Absolutely. So that's one of the things that I want to talk about. Absolutely. So Saturday, we had a great event. It was organized by Plate Licking Pleb, sponsored by ShakePay. CoinKite was there to raffle off a cold card Mark IV. Luxor was there to raffle off two S9s. Thank you to everybody. Greg Foss was there. Tomer Strollet was there to give some great speeches. And it was at Safari Bar and Grill. Met so many people. Everybody that came to see us, thank you very much. It was wonderful for meeting some of the plebs, some for the first time and some for the multiple times. So this is wonderful. So yeah, I'm not sure if you want to add anything to that particular piece, Joey.
Just one thing, man. It's always humbling and continues to be like more and more humbling every time we go somewhere. It feels like we meet people who like the show. One thing I'll say this time around, a lot of people who are a little longer in the tooth than you and me coming up to us and talking about how much they enjoy the program. I continue to be blown away. I shouldn't be, probably, because like you and I can see how much the show has been growing. And we know that people who listen to the show and Canadians in general understand that there's a problem in cash, there's a problem in economics, there's a problem in all these different places. And so to see more and more people shouldn't be a surprise, but it is every single time. And it's an amazing feeling. So thank you to all you guys, people who came out. I know there was people whose parents were there.
TJ.
I was going to say it's in the chat. If you want to know whose parents, I missed them. I'm sorry. And the next time, I can't wait, man. I'm looking forward to another one in the hopefully not too distant future. I guess there's probably going to be another one before the summer's out, and we'll probably be there.
So with TGM, I just wanted to make note that they did say hello to me. And I did point him towards the BTC Sessions video. So I'm going to pump his video about the cold card, but also check other videos from BTC Sessions, because his parents, from what I recall, won the cold card. So I pointed them to the BTC Sessions.
That's dope.
Yeah. So I had to say, you know, if you're going to check it out, you know, if you're going to use the wallet, sort of the cold card, might as well check out the video from BTC Sessions, and you'll be set up for a while. And also, just want to note one thing I forgot to mention. What was announced at the Safari Bar and Grill meetup this past Saturday? Next year, sometime in the summer, there's going to be, what is it called? The Canadian Bitcoin Conference. Is that the unofficial title?
Canadian Bitcoin Conference. Yeah.
Yeah. So there we go. So we're going to have our own, to call our own very own Bitcoin conference. And it's going to be taking place in Toronto in the summer of 2023. These are just a very preliminary information that I have. Things may change, so don't shoot the messenger.
I'm just going to try and throw in the name of the conference in the chat while you continue to rip off the housekeeping here.
Perfect. So another thing I just want to make note, please leave a review for the show on the Apple podcasting front or on the Spotify front. On the Apple podcast, if you leave a review and a comment, we'll be happy to read it. We do this all the time at the beginning of the show. Also, want to note that we'll be donating Satoshis tomorrow that were donated to us for Podcasting 2.0. It's going to be the last we're going to be sending out to Meet Premier Bitcoin. It's the Twitter tag is MyFirstBitcoin_. And they're an NGO that's focused on free Bitcoin education in El Salvador. So next week we'll be donating to @BitcoinSmiles. And they are trying to provide free dental care to the people of El Salvador. And they take Bitcoin donations. We're going to try to help out the people over there as much as possible. So if you send us a donation through the Podcasting 2.0, we're sending it out to these individuals, these organizations, trying to make life better for everybody else. Anything you want to add to that?
No, just feels good to be donating. Feels good to be turning that stuff into something good. I know, you know, like you mentioned, it's amazing the kind of generosity we've seen so far. And as the generosity continues to increase and accelerate, I'm happy to be helping these guys out. It feels good, man. I'm glad we were able to find a couple of those great causes for the first 2 months. If you have a cause and you're listening, watching, let us know, man. We'll definitely take it under consideration. Happy to try and give some of this stuff to the people who need it definitely more than we do. So, yeah, let's leave it there.
Two things. One last thing before we go to the price. Jmart, Joey, you had a meeting or a powwow with him. You were on his podcast. Yes. Check out the Jmart podcast out. I was on it a few weeks back. Joey was just on it. The episode was released today. Go ahead, Joey. You may want to talk a little bit more about that.
It's a lot of fun. John's a great guy. I met him at the ShakePay event a few weeks ago. I guess it was the beginning of June now, right? And we tried to hook our schedules up a bunch. Kudos to that guy. I think we're busy, Len, but like he's doing that show. He's had a couple of guests on and stuff, and he's got kids in the mix. Yeah. And you know, it's difficult to line up schedules. He was able to accommodate me not once, but twice. I think the first time he had to cancel for some reason, I forget. But the second time he was able to make it, which was great. We had a blast. Talked to him for about an hour. I hope you guys enjoyed that. Check it out. I retweeted it today. I'll retweet it again maybe right now. So if you head over to my Twitter profile, you'll be able to see it. But yeah, great show. And he's a good Bitcoiner. Always like talking to other good Bitcoiners.
Recommend listening to his show. And John, if you haven't yet, last I check, you haven't, add yourself to the Fountain podcast so you could collect some.
What are you doing, Johnny? What are you doing?
Yeah, don't be left in the dark. Let's get you into the 21st century. Yeah, I don't even know where the fuck we are right now. But anyways, I do know where we are in the price of Bitcoin. In terms of Canadian dollars, is 28,612.
You're killing me here.
I got it right here. Look behind me.
We got to work on the
Joey, look
the
behind me.
21,992 American.
Okay.
There you go.
Yeah, see, I got you just it. Look. It's right there. It's just showing it right in the face. But there we go. So all the formalities are done. And if you're okay with it, I'll just transition to the one major story we have for the week. What are your thoughts?
Can I just tell you that I loved getting the notes for this week's show and seeing one story. So I'm ready to go deep. I got a couple of pages on this today.
Oh man, this is going to be a long one, ladies and gentlemen, but let's do it. So yeah, we'll be talking about, as we do most weeks, it's the weekly update on the health of the economy. And this comes at the heels of the CPI print, which just came in for June 2022. And 9.1% was the manipulated number that they are presenting to us. And without getting into the specifics, what made up this June CPI print, I just want to note that this is the highest number since November of 1981. But something I do really want to get into is the Putin price hike. And we could finally put this fucking thing to a rest. It has been roughly 5 months since the start of the invasion in Ukraine by Russia. And the CPI during these 5 months since the invasion took place has gone up 1.2%. And using the same 5 month span leading up to the invasion, the CPI went up 2.1%. So using official numbers, which is a CPI, the CPI went up faster leading up to the inflation, those 5 months, than the 5 months after the invasion. So you know what? The Putin price hike, it may have a small impact, but albeit it's still very, very small, but it has less of a bite than does the policies and measures that were enacted by the White House and the Fed. The CPI fucking proves it. We could put this Putin price hike thing to rest once and for all. But in terms of the CPI, we could actually tie in a Bitcoin story to this thing, which is absolutely incredible. The Fed has released a chart again, which measures a CPI in Bitcoin. Why would they do this? What is the purpose?
How could, do you have the wind horse meme ready where he's pointing up? Why would he do this?
Why?
What's going on at the Federal Reserve?
But I mean, to me, it shows me that Bitcoin has already won and it's planted a seed in somebody's head that is creating the charts at the Federal Reserve. And I would not be shocked if these individuals are Bitcoiners. And I'll be talking about Fed employees later on about being orange-pilled. But we can just continually move on and talk about the CPI. And we saw it, 9.1. But we can even transition a little bit further, the misery index. And this is something that it calculates both the employment rate, unemployment rate added to the inflation rate. Now, if you look at the chart, it is continually going up, steadily up to the right since the beginning of 2021. The misery index just goes up and up and up, and it's going to continue to do so. But we could dig a little bit further into this. We could look into the economy and some of the problems that the economy that we are dealing with and everybody is also dealing with as well. It's being reported that rent delinquency has reached a new record. It has been slowly creeping up each month. 35% of small businesses in the U.S. reportedly cannot pay their rent in full or on time for the month of June. 35% of small businesses. This is at a time where rent keeps going up. Landlords need to recoup some of the extra cost from their tenants to pay for increased maintenance. So this is just a spiral that's just going to go out of control. And we put some more color on this story. For small businesses like Uber and Lyft drivers, 22% of them could not pay rent in the month of May. And that spiked to 50% in June. The cause of this? Gas prices are overwhelming them. And this is just a small sample they took. And there's a lot more data out there to show that rent is going to be difficult to pay for businesses and people moving forward as the cost of living increases and wages stay stagnant. But we could also throw in also people potentially losing their jobs. So this number of delinquency for rent is just going to go up over time. And once this domino falls, landlords are going to be forced to either sell or lower rent substantially. And I'm sure BlackRock will be there ready to snap up the cheap real estate. Larry the Fink will be all smiles at that time. And we could talk about real estate abroad as well. I don't want to talk about Canada just yet. We'll be talking about that a little bit more in depth later on. But we could look what's happening in China, for instance. We recently had the high-profile Evergrande rug pull, and now there may be more to come. There's reports coming out of China that home buyers are refusing to pay mortgage debt. This totals $83 billion. And there's even more problems coming out of China. There's reports of banks running out of liquidity, and it's becoming increasingly difficult to withdraw funds. You hear stories and pictures and video footages, long queues at the banks, clashes with police, rioting that's being reported. But again, take this with a grain of salt, because this is coming from China and they control the narrative. So we don't know exactly what's going on. So take that with a grain of salt. We could talk about also energy, and oil prices have come down since its peak because there's now fears of a recession going on and potentially less demand until we get the confirmed reality that we're in a recession. But still, nonetheless, that oil is coming down in price. But things should improve if they ever do. OPEC has said they will be unable to meet demands should there be a request for an increased supply. So the supply will not be able to keep up with the demand. Number go up when it comes to energy. But really, there's so much wrong here, Joey. Who do we rely on to fix the mess? A report this week from Biden's top 68 appointees have stated that they have just 2.4 years of business experience. That's incredible, only 2.4 years of business experience. And this is including 62% of officials who have, quote, virtually no industry experience, unquote, on their work records. Remember this stuff, because the next time you apply for a job and it says you need X amount of experience in order to be qualified for the job, you could always point to the White House and say, look, they're fucking hiring their own people over there with no experience, so you could be hired for any job that you wish as well. But remember, they're doing things for our own best interests at heart, not for their own, right? Well, we could use Nancy Pelosi's husband as an example, reportedly purchasing $5 million in chip stocks. And this took place at a time right before the Senate will be voting on a chip subsidy bill, for which Nancy herself is supposedly supporting. And so they're obviously working for us, right? Not for their own best interest to pad their own pocketbook. Give me a fucking break. We know what's going on. They're fucking padding their own pocketbooks and they fuck us in the end. But the vast experience that the White House has included for the last little while, remember, nobody in history can do a fist pump as well as Biden. And he put those skills on display when he went to the Saudi crown prince. He fucking fist bumped with that guy. I'm sure that's the top-notch diplomacy, and ties with the Saudi government is going to be stronger as a result of that fist bump. But back to the economy. CPI is running hot, but the economy is not. And we look at how is the Fed going to respond? Well, they may raise rates by 100 basis points. The last time we had the CPI above 9% was 1981. Joey, I got to ask you a question here. Do you know the last time we had CPI 9% or higher? When was the last time they raised rates 100 basis points?
Take a guess. The last 100 point raise or the last 100 point raise with CPI at 9?
Yes, the latter of the two.
Never. I guess never.
It happened in 1981. So the last time we were there with the interest rate this high, the CPI this high, they also raised rates that high. So there's no coincidence they're doing this same type of bullshit again. But we also look at the relationship between Bitcoin and the Federal Reserve. So we're going to get back to this story. The Federal Reserve Bank of Cleveland released a working paper called, quote, "The Lightning Network Turning Bitcoin into Money," end quote. And it talks, this is from the Federal Reserve, which talks about the benefits of using Lightning, the scalability, cheap and quick transactions, and so forth. What world do we live in that the Federal Reserve is releasing fucking papers pumping Bitcoin? Again, I think we have orange-pilled some people in the Federal Reserve, and I love it. To me, it looks like, as Massa calls it, late-stage fiat. And I'm going to go a little bit further into this. Joey, I'm not sure if you saw this awesome story. Zilch. They sponsored a promotion through Uber Eats and Papa John's. Did you see this one?
There's a company called Zilch.
Zilch.
Okay.
No. So they sponsored a promotion through Uber Eats and Papa John's. This is a good one, Joy. Where you could buy now a pizza and pay later. You buy a pizza today, you pay back over a 6-week period of time.
Yeah.
When buying pizza has a schedule of a 6-week payment period, you know the fucking end is near. And you don't want to know how bad fucking things are going to get. Fucking Apple is now slowing down hiring and spending growth on some divisions. What they say to cope with potential economic turndown. Fucking Apple. That's absolutely incredible. But to end this all, I'm just going to use this one new metric to measure rising costs. With Russia cutting off gas to Europe and energy prices over in Europe just fucking soaring, higher than Elizabeth Warren's cheekbones, I just want to present to you the Nutella purchasing power parity. And I didn't create this. This is somebody else created this, but it's actually a wonderful way to illustrate how things have gone crazy. 1 euro does not equal 1 euro in the European Union. A euro in Germany could get you more Nutella, for instance, than in Italy. In fact, you get 15% more Nutella in Germany than you can in Europe. So the price of Nutella varies depending on where you buy it. In Germany, it's the lowest, 5 euro and 6 cents on average. France, a little bit higher, 5 euro and 45 cents. Britain, a little bit higher, 5 euro and 78 cents. But in Italy, 6 euro and 66 cents. This is Nutella arbitrage. We have an opportunity here to make some excellent money. But I say this, when the price of Nutella spikes in your country, you know the end is fucking near. Europe is about to collapse. And there's no gas for homes. Russia just cut off gas to Europe. High energy costs are going up. We have disparity with the price of Nutella. It's going crazy. But I think we could have something set up here. We could call Zilch. And we could have maybe Uber Eats bring over some of the fucking Russian gas and maybe have an easy payment plan for the next 600 years. We have a framework set up. Let's fucking do it. This is the out-of-the-box thinking we need done. Because so far, what's being done and the way they've been doing business has fucking failed us, Joey. Go ahead. Just rip it.
I think you're right about everything you said there. We're going to overlap a little bit on some of the notes that I made. I'll just point out from a Bitcoin standpoint that we've never had a economic environment like we have now since blocks started to be churned out, 13 years ago or whatever the exact date was. So we've basically only ever had Bitcoin in a really friendly, really accommodative policy environment. You can say what you want about like 2018 when there was some tightening, 2019 maybe, but like generally speaking, there was never the same kind of fear that there is now with the economy. You agree with that? I think that's probably
Yeah. Maybe the only thing you could say 2009, maybe because that was at the tailwind.
It was too young.
I'll buy that. Yeah.
Yeah. It didn't really matter. From the energy, perspective, this is really where the core of most of the problems are at the moment. You could say it's war, you could say it's inflation, but I think energy really is at the core of a lot of these issues at the moment. Germany restarted or is planning to restart in the very, very near future 16 coal power plants. Under their new fake ESG grift mandate. Actually, I think we have to say people date, right? So the ESG people date, it's almost undoubtedly going to take a key role into the future because, as you mentioned, Gazprom declared force majeure today. Len, are we really going to pretend that no one could see this coming? Like there was no concern that maybe Russia would just stop shipping that gas all of a sudden? This is the summer, okay? Wait till the winter to see what this really looks like as far as like, as you mentioned, sort of Eurozone being on the brink. Interesting stuff to think about, but things we're gonna have to consider, I think, very strongly in the next little while. Regarding buy now, pay later, we talked about this a few weeks ago. As you start to see buy now, pay later available on more and more platforms for more and more insignificant transitory purchases, like a pizza, plate liquor in the chat saying you can get your oil changed and pay later. Like this sort of stuff that's like 30, 40 bucks. The more you see that, the more you have to remember that none of the BNPL, totals are counted in the debt calculations for countries, for consumers, for individuals, for, whatever, right? Household balance sheets. None of it, is counted. So you got this number that's kind of growing slowly in the background, becoming more accessible in the background at the same time that traditional credit is becoming less accessible. So it may seem like credit is sort of tightening for the household. But in a lot of cases, Len, soon I would guess, a lot of those little shitty purchases that people who don't have a clue make frequently is going to start to pile up in some other pocket of the economy that's not accounted for. Let's see how long it takes before BNPL shows up in the question period at the FOMC. We're seeing offers rescinded all across the tech industry. Shopify, which by all accounts is a well-run company, okay, with a lot of good people working there, good Canadian company. They're rescinding offers. If you go on the University of Waterloo subreddit, apparently there's a lot of people who are upset that their offers to Shopify were rescinded in the last week or so. So you got those guys doing it. Facebook and Salesforce doing the same thing, though a little more quietly. Salesforce just cut 40% out of a 43-story tower in San Fran. They're selling 40% of the tower. San Fran right now has a commercial office space vacancy of 21%, or maybe a little higher at the moment, which is crazy. I also just heard on the Woke Antidote the other day, TB went to San Fran on a business trip and spent $17 on a kale salad.
It's a lot of money. That's 270 US, by the way.
Len, how much is that? That's like $23-$24 here for a salad.
And they can probably grow that locally in California.
There's no protein in it, Len. Like, what are we talking about here? It's a kale salad. That's like, it's unbelievable, the descent and the decline there. You mentioned Apple, and I tweeted this today. So forgive me if you guys have already read this from me or heard it from me. But Apple's slowing hiring with how much cash? $80 billion in cash, and they're slowing hiring.
Is that it? I thought it was higher amount of cash. Either way, it's a lot. $80 billion.
If it's higher, the red flag is like waving brightly at this stage, right? For economic outlook. Because if those guys are willing to come out and say, this is what we're doing, we're afraid of XYZ in the near term and damage the stock price on a day where everything else was green. I don't know if Apple finished green or not, but I know it was down about 1.5%.
$202 billion.
So $200 billion on the balance sheet. Yeah, far cry from the 80 I had on my sheet here. But if those guys are willing to do that, Len, it tells you they're really concerned about the future. Now, I'll go one step further as far as like whether or not they're concerned. If you look at Apple's business model, again, $200 billion on the balance sheet. They can weather almost anything short of an apocalyptic event, okay? If you look at Apple and the way they're starting to conduct business, they're starting to do subscription services for phones, small monthly payments for their phones, small monthly payments for AppleCare, small monthly payments for peripherals, small monthly payments for Apple Music and stuff like that. And Len, they also just added a native buy now, pay later service in Apple Pay. Mm-hmm. So you look at all that and you say, man, if anyone's really got the data to know whether or not this is going to be important in the next little while, and also even though they have the chops and the resiliency to weather something like this, they're still going this road, it's these guys. And I think that's a real, real red flag that not a lot of people are talking about. It's kind of like just a tech story more than anything. But that's a big, big red flag in my opinion. The NEHB, according to SB of Locando, and I saw this from Daniel DiMartino Booth as well, just had its second largest fall in prospective buyers for new homes on record. Second largest ever. Only surpassed by the 2020 COVID drop. So you think about that. We talked about the importance of housing starts in the economy, what it means to as well, the rent pressures in the short and medium term. If people can't afford houses, they still don't want to live with their parents. They're going to move out and they're going to rent, and it's going to push prices up, and you're going to get more calls for insane rent control policies and other sorts of nonsense ceilings that liberal politicians want to put on things. Short-term thinking everywhere you look, and it's going to cause problems. Biden, like you mentioned, went to MBS and his pals at OPEC Plus and tried to convince him to produce more oil and left with his tail between his legs. Like I'm biased, okay? Because I definitely lean conservative, and everyone knows my feelings on Biden and his administration and his just sort of lack of competency, let's say. That's a very kind term, but I'm going to use it. His lack of competency at the moment. I have never, Len, seen a guy get his ass whipped in public so many times in a six-month period. It's really been like dense ass whipping after ass whipping after ass whipping. Every time Corinne Jean-Pierre goes on stage, every time Jen Psaki goes on stage, every time Biden makes a public appearance, everything from shaking hands with the air to falling off his bike to fist bumping to the unnecessary masking to theatrics of diplomacy. It's just one thing after another, and it's just he's getting lashed every time he leaves his basement. Okay. I've never seen anything like this. This has got to be a concern for Americans. And it's a concern for us too in Canada, because that's really, you know, if they're not competent, Len, we're not going to send a fleet of canoes out to take on aircraft carriers in the ocean off the coast of Vancouver, right? Off the coast of British Columbia. We ain't doing that. We need those guys to be competent, and they're not competent right now. That's a big problem. You mentioned this story about Biden's top 68 appointees. That really is like an indictment of the quality of person that he's able to hire. But I would also say that if you look at the experience there, you're really demonstrating what the problem is in no uncertain terms. Everything is theoretical. No one's ever run a business. No one's ever had to consider what it's like to exist on the quality of the decisions you make. And more specifically, no one in the government has to make an economic calculation. When you and me decide what to spend money on, we have to know where that money's coming from. Are we going to be able to make money on the spend? Whether it's like something as dumb as advertising this show or buying a bag of milk or getting a gym membership or whatever, everything you do, you make that calculation. Is there money coming in for all the money that's going out? If you got a bunch of people in government who have never had to make that calculation in their professional lives, what do you think the result's going to be? Do you think the result's going to be policies that help control inflation, help control the cost of capital, help control all these things? Or do you think that they're going to fly off the fucking deep end as soon as they get the chance because they've never, of course they're going to. And it's no surprise either, Len, that the people who are most anxious to have these policies aid them, I'm thinking specifically of our academic friends who are dying for loan forgiveness, who weren't able to get jobs after they finished their underwater basket weaving degrees. These people are in the same boat, right? They made the same bad decisions. They failed the same sort of economic, the rudimentary economics exam of real life. And now they're dying for someone else to bail them out. And they may well get it, Len, if this is the kind of guy and girl that Biden is bringing in. So all this to say that this is a real problem over there. Now you got China also publicly declaring that they want the U.S. to immediately halt this weapon shipment to Taiwan. Did you see that today? 100 million. They're saying don't do it. Yeah, 100 million. They're saying don't do it. They're saying don't do it. And they're also saying if there is an unwind of friendly relations or cordial relations on the military front between America and China, you will know whose fault it is. And this is in no uncertain terms. They're also, on the other hand, you know, sort of on the diplomacy side, they're inviting the leaders of France, Italy, Germany, and Spain to come meet in China in November. Do you think they're going to be talking about the next iteration of the Nintendo Switch? Do you think they're going to be talking about how to find all the shrines in Breath of the Wild? Do you think they're going to be talking about where to get the best Chinese food in Connecticut? No, they're going to be talking about, you guys need to align with us now because we're the new unipolar power and America is completely falling off a cliff here. And if you don't want to align with us, that's fine, but don't come crying to us when we destroy them. That's honestly how I feel like this is going to go. I look at Canada. The dollar here is in better shape than in America because we're not so shy about our natural resources yet. But that could change at any given moment, given the sort of nature of, the whims of the popular majority, unfortunately. America's in bad shape. The euro is, I think, $1.01 today.
Oh, it pumped.
Well, it's got to get over, like, amateur TA corner here for a second. It's got to get over $1.03, basically, and sustain there before you can really take even the slightest of breaths. And it would only be a slight breath at $1.03.
Oh, man, I'm celebrating at this 2-cent gain. This is fucking party time.
Yeah, maybe, whatever, buy another 30-year-old car. And
Nutella, brother, Nutella.
That's right. Yeah. And I think, like, if you look over in Europe, it's not just the euro. It's the energy situation, of course. But also, like, Italy now is going to have a snap election. Who do you think Italians are going to elect in this current environment? Do you think it's going to be someone who's friendly with the EU and the ECB? Or do you think it's going to be someone like Trump? Like, who do you think you're going to get? You're going to get a populist government there. Whether you agree with populism or not, whether you think it's good or bad to kind of turn inward and defend your own personal interests, the European Union relies on their member states doing the opposite. And so if some of their member states are starting to turn inward, they got a problem. And that problem is going to lead to weakness in the Eurozone and weakness on the continent more than it already has. I'll try and, like, make a positive point here to finish. Two things. One, with all this stuff that I just said, which is not, it's not commonly misunderstood or anything. Like, everyone kind of sees what's going on. You can't fudge the numbers at the pump. You can't fudge numbers in the store. You can't turn the news off and completely ignore all the stuff that's going on in Russia and Ukraine. All that is going on. And what do we see in Bitcoin and even the Qs as well in the NASDAQ? You're getting a little bit of a relief rally here. I can see in the chat people are talking about how Bitcoin's been ripping the last hour. It's got to be up at like 22,000, something like that right now.
We'll see in a moment once the block clock updates.
So whatever it is, it's doing pretty well given all these things. Now, let me really paint a fun picture for you here. We talked about the changing narrative around rates and how there's already sort of a primer coming through the media, at least in Canada and the US, maybe the ECB as well. I don't remember if we talked about them or not, but there's already kind of a primer coming through that's trying to grease our wheels for this new narrative that the rates going up is not going to help inflation. We have to do it some other way. If the price of Bitcoin is moving now, okay, and we agree that the Fed has been as hawkish as they've ever been, Would the rates really, and we talked about how the, like, there's already in the bond market, rate cuts are being priced in for the first quarter of 2023, right? So if Powell or even the BOC, if Bank of Canada even came out after doing a 100 bip raise and Powell and friends did it, you know, another 75 this month, the first time they come out and do a 50 or a 25, the stock market's going to go fucking apeshit. It's going to go fucking apeshit because it's going to signal the turnaround. They're not even going to have to stop raising or start cutting. They're just going to have to come down from 75 or 50. And once they do that, the things are going to go nuts again. And then what's the plan? Yeah, well, what's the plan, right? So like if you're holding Bitcoin or any, I know that we don't want to compare all the time Bitcoin to the NASDAQ, but like, let's face it, they trade.
There's a connection.
Yeah, they trade on the same sort of news and outlook. They're risk on assets for most people, let's face it. So if we start to see those prices rip, Len, what is the response going to be from central banks? Is the response going to be go back to raising with the understanding that they already backed off sooner than they wanted to because of X, Y, and Z economic conditions? Like, I just don't understand how you could look at this picture and think to yourself anything except you can be in the market longer than they can keep rates going up. There's just no alternative at the moment. And I know that people are scared. I know that not everyone is like in the same boat as you and me, maybe as far as like making ends meet. But man, if you could park a little bit of cash in the market, not financial advice, there's no better time, I think, to be happy to wait out job owning and poor policy decisions than right now, period. I can't think of a better time since I've been an adult. Maybe 2008, I guess, when they dropped that, you know, 80 billion, that seemed like a big number at the time, I guess.
It's a drop in the bucket now.
It's like a day of spending. It's a day of spending, basically. And like, this is the kind of thing.
It's one care package.
Yeah. That's one private jet with Ben Stiller on it helping the Ukraine. And so like, if you're a Bitcoin guy and you're thinking about selling, or even an equities guy, you're thinking about selling, my question for you would just be why, what do you see that's going to keep, what do you see that tells you that the rate hikes will continue at the same rate they're going now? And on top of that, that they won't at least slow down by 25 or 50 bips off of the projected 75 or 100. Because even if they just slow down 25 or 50, you're going to get a huge return immediately. This is like the day the announcement is made, you're going to make a ton of money.
It's still going to be detrimental to people that are carrying debt, even a 25 basis point increase. And that's the thing you're going to have to be worrying in the end is the commoner. It's not the markets per se, but it's just the people that may be defaulting on debt, either mortgages, credit card, you name it. And every time you raise rates, you're going to be adding more stress to their debt load as it is. So I see where you're coming from. But I will just play devil's advocate here. We're far from the bottom. The debt load,
like, who fucking cares? Who, honestly, if you got like under $10,000 in debt, okay, I don't know what the number is for the average Canadian, but like, who fucking cares? You're going to get bailed out. You're going to get cheaper hydro. You're going to get price controls some other place. You're going to get some kind of stimulus check. You're going to get some kind of tax rebate. Like, the money is going to come back to you, because if it doesn't, you'll vote a different way.
But it doesn't. That doesn't indicate strength in the economy.
I'm not saying any of this stuff indicates strength in the economy. The stock market going up on a 50 point hike is the furthest thing from economic strength. But I'm saying from the point of view of the average like retail investor, okay, guys like you and me, why would I be selling now, trying to catch a lower price on risk assets?
Because
on anything.
Because I could see, and again, with the devil's advocate hat, I'll put on and just talk about it, but. We have yet to hit the floor. We're still far from it. There's still so much ground we're gonna have to dig a hole into. And
what makes you say that? Well, honestly, what makes you say that? We just had a 100 basis point hike. The States is gonna hike again, probably 75, and it doesn't seem like the market cares at all. It doesn't seem like the market cares.
Yeah, they may not, but once you see a lot more of commoners start, as I mentioned, defaulting, and this stuff trickles down, and it creates a spiral. That's just my opinion. Like, it'll just come out, and you'll never be able to catch up onto that. It becomes a huge money pit, and then you become Venezuela, you become Turkey, you become Lebanon, you become you name it.
The only thing I would say to defend your position is that, well, two announcements are going to come in the next little while that are going to leave shockwaves, maybe. One is you're going to get your official recession announcement. You're going to get your second quarter of negative GDP. Mm-hmm. So two contractive quarters equals a recession. The other one I would say is the earnings forecasts for equities are going to be as bad as they've been in 20 years during the next set of earnings calls, which by the way, is inside of 2 weeks. Yeah, everything's going to be bad. Everything. The projection is going to be bad because of inflation, but also because of demand shock. Mm-hmm. And so all that stuff is going to be bad. The question is, how bad is it going to be? And are either of those things going to hold, you know, an ace over the first 50-point hike or 25-point hike?
I don't know. And there's so many unknowns here. I to be honest, I didn't expect the Federal Reserve and the Bank of Canada to raise rates this high this quickly, but here we are. So that's why everything is off the table. And they'll just continually do it until something breaks. That's going to be their ace up their sleeve. And then once something breaks, then they're going to have to do another knee-jerk reaction.
This is the other theory. You know, you're right about that, that they raise rates that quickly because they needed ammunition in the tank for when they have to cut inevitably, you know, inside of, am I alone? If you're in the chat, maybe send a comment here so I don't feel like I'm on a fucking island. But are they going to cut inside the next 12 months? It's almost like 100% guarantee Canada, Europe, and the United States.
Well, Europe
cut inside of 12 months.
Europe, they're already very low. We'll talk about them, their rates, but it's priced in the markets. The smart money is saying, yes, it's going to be cut within the next 9 months or so. We'll forget something like that. So based on that, I'm not going to say no. I'm just going to say it's going to happen. But I just want to touch back on two points you said. Number one, you were talking about the Italian elections because they don't have an
election scheduled, but it looks like they're going to have a snap election.
So they never, because it's fragmented, it's fractured their parliament. They never do a majority government. It's always a coalition government. So that's what's going to happen. It may be a populist government, who knows, but still it's going to be something that requires the support of one or more than one party in order to make the parliament continue to do their job. And another thing we talked about, I mentioned and you touched upon a little bit more, was the Biden's team with the lack of experience. And this is these are positions that are not on the job training type positions. You have to have the experience going into it because the ramifications for being wrong impact everybody. It's not like you're a desk clerk, and I'm not trying to offend desk clerks, but if you do something wrong as a desk clerk versus wrong in the White House at a very important position, the ramifications are much different. You could fix things, something up like very quickly as a desk clerk, not the same when you're working at the White House. That it just shows you that they have the wrong people they're trying to push. They're trying to push their own people. But this is common amongst that. It's not just a Democrat thing. The Republicans do the same thing. Just unfortunately, they put the wrong people to the forefront to actually do the position, to run their jobs. And yeah, that's all I have to say about that. I'm not sure if you want to add any more flavor.
Good discussion. Good back and forth there. I'm curious to see what happens, man. We're going to have quite a bit of fodder here for the show in the next little while. I think more than we're used to just because of the insanity and all over the world. So,
all right,
strap in, buddy. Strap in.
All right. So we will then transition to the Canadian news. And the very first story I'm going to be talking about is Ledin's proof of reserves. We touched upon it at the very beginning of the show. They completed it and it's now ready for verification. And this is their fourth round of proof of reserves. So if you want to go verify, if you're a Ledin client and you want to verify what they have on their platform, you could do so right now. They must have sent you an email, and from there you were able to do whatever it is you need to do. I'm not sure if you want to add anything more to that story. It's pretty brief, pretty to the point, and
nothing. No, it's great. I mean, there's no better place if you're gonna take, you know, X amount of risk with a little bit of your Bitcoin. Obviously we don't think there's any other better place than Ledin. This is a great example of why. That's all I'll say.
Okay. So we touched upon a few things with the economy. We didn't touch upon Canadian economy. So we will talk about it a little bit right now. And we had this past week, the knee-jerk reaction from the Bank of Canada, where they raised rates by 100 basis points. And more of this, maybe not 100 basis points, but more of raises are likely to come in the following months. Now, after this raise took place, I'm going to be rhyming off the interest rates of all G7 nations. Get this, Japan. And this, I just want to state that the source of this information that I got was from Trading Economics. So hopefully this is correct. Japan is the lowest at minus 0.1%. They have negative interest rates. France, Germany, Italy, 0%. 0%.
Is this the real rate or is it the bank rate minus inflation?
This is the rates okay. provided by the bank. Okay. So we're not
okay.
adjusting
nominal anything. Nominal rate, I should say. Yeah. Okay.
So Italy, France, Germany, 0%. UK, 1.25%. United States, 1.75%. Canada leading the pack after this recent rate, 2.5%. Still, you know, we raised it with 1%. We're still at the top. We're at the top of the heap right now, but only 2.5%. So it goes to show you that between Canada and I'll even say in the United States, they're the only two central banks that seem to be the most active with raising rates. Maybe you could say the UK. They raised rates a few times this year. But other than that, the other ones, the other G7 nations, no effing way. They're not touching their rates at all. They're keeping it where they are. They do not mean business. They're not adding any fucking ammo to their chambers. They are fucked. We're fucked, but they're more fucked. But anyways.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're spot on. We talked about it already. I'll just mention here because I can't get enough of this American interest rate talk. Boomer threw in as well as a midterm in October, as far as like when they're going to cut. Like that's another huge, huge factor. And I'm sure Europe and these other places are thinking about this too. I don't know, man. I can't imagine going into the next 2 years without having like, I don't know, 200 basis points at least to cut. Like you need it. You need it.
I could say this. We don't know because Tiff Macklem doesn't know. He doesn't have a clue. And I say this. He should have got a copy of Sim Banker before he got the job because then he would not be learning on a job. And there's a quote that was, I'm going to just say, from the Financial Post newspaper, quote from Tiff. If we had known everything a year ago that we known today, yes, we would probably have started raising rates a little bit earlier. But we didn't know. A year ago, there was still a lot of excess supply in the economy, end quote. This fucking guy didn't have a clue what the fuck was going on. And he said if he did know, he would start raising rates. We have to start a GoFundMe for this guy to go for one of those weekend courses to learn how to be a central banker. We should start one up today. Let's do it. But nonetheless, he does say that he expects, this is what he said this past week, he expects the CPI print for June for Canada to come in at a little over 8%. In the month of May, we had 7.7%. So we're talking, based on his jargon, a 0.5% increase, which is pretty substantial. And remember, this is the guy, and we got to take everything he says with a grain of salt because we just have no clue what the heck he's doing, what he's thinking, or what he's doing. Because he even just said he had no clue what happened. But he also, in June in 2020, he said there would be no inflation. Here we are, fucking massive inflation. So yeah, it's really, really bad. The people leading this have claimed that they don't know what the fuck is going on. And the people that are suffering from this, aside from the plebs that are, but people that hold mortgages, and I just got stats yesterday, 53% of all mortgages are adjustable rate mortgages.
Those we talked about this before. Yeah, we talked about that. It's a huge number. Yeah.
It's slightly more than half. So wow. Bought a house recently, and if it's adjustable rate, you are screwed. And you know who to talk to while you're screwed is fucking these people at the top, like Tiff Macklem.
I follow Tiff Macklem on Spotify. I don't know if you have Spotify or no.
No.
I follow him on Spotify, and he's been playing this song an awful lot lately. I think I know why now. You might recognize this tune, listener, viewer, and Len. When's it start? I wish that I knew what I know now. If only we the fucking governor of the Bank of Canada.
What a disaster this is turning out to be. Oh man. So but moving on, the CMHC, and that's the Canadian Housing Agency, they cut its national home price forecasting for this year. And they also did the same for next year. And they say they're not predicting a sharp correction, Imagine that, because they say there's a housing shortage that will support the prices. No fucking way is this happening. Right, again, rising rates, stagnant inflation, the economy not really doing much. It's all going to contribute to fucking the sharp drop in prices. In fact, CREA noted the price of homes last month dropped $1,000 per day. That's incredible. And then CMHC goes on to say that they think the national housing prices could drop 5% if the Bank of Canada rates go to 3.5%. We exceeded 5% drop. We're not even at 3.5% Bank of Canada. I don't know what these guys are fucking smoking. We had the largest seasonal adjustment decline in the Canada benchmark for their housing prices on record last month. And that is larger than during the financial crisis, larger than 2017 mini turndown, and it, even before the 100 basis points increase took into effect. So it's going to get even worse last month. But for housing shortages, okay, there may be a housing shortage, fine. In Ontario, up to 60% of the new supply of homes in cities were bought by investors. The demand for homes is thought because it's owning a good home, owning a home is a good investment. I agree with that. Then what does that say for the economy as a whole? It kind of says that everything else is shit and owning a home is really the best place to put your money. This is, but then again, I have to point out, this isn't natural demands in the market. This is these artificial demands. And but even with these demands right now in the market, the housing price is plummeting. It's, I don't know. And housing prices dropped in the month of June, 1.9%. This is the largest monthly decline ever, according to the RBC. So, yeah, not looking good on so many fronts, Joey.
I kind of agree that there's a bit of a floor for some varieties of homes. Like, there's always going to be a demand for, like, I don't know, an entry-level side split, you know, like something that's like 900 square feet or something like that, or like a first home, a starter home. There's always going to be a demand for that. Even if that's the case, though, it still doesn't fix this investment property problem, because even if there's always demand for those homes, the investors who, you know, maybe no longer want to spend their money on these other homes and would rather buy these starter homes to rent, they're going to swoop in and grab this stuff. That's not including, by the way, foreign firms, places like BlackRock that we've talked a ton about on this show. Like, where are people going to live? And so that's why we mentioned in the A block there, the economic sort of woes story. It's going to put upward pressure on rents. And it's just like, that's the kind of stuff that starts a spiral of discontent in a modern society. You know, like, I can't afford to live here anymore. And landlords can't afford to raise rents. So they don't want to own homes or can't afford to. Landlords aren't allowed to raise rents anymore. So they don't want to own investment properties. Like, it's all just like the incentives are busted everywhere. Yeah. Because this invisible hand, like, they just keep trying to move things around and control. It's like the what is that old cartoon where, like, they're in a canoe and one hole sprouts and the guy puts his thumb in it and then another hole pops up. And before you know it, he's got all his digits, fingers and toes in these holes and the boat's still taking on water. That's where you are now. And you were probably here 10 years ago in 08 and somehow managed to get all your digits and fill all the holes. But now you just don't have enough fingers and toes. And still, they refuse to just admit that maybe we got to get off the boat. They just keep trying to take this thing out further and further to sea without any concern for the obvious outcomes that are, I think, really clear to a lot of people at this stage. It's frustrating. But again, like, the common theme on this show lasts a while, then, it's frustrating, but it's not surprising. That's a fact.
You were just talking about rent, and surprisingly, that's my next topic. So you must have been reading my mind. And we talked about rent delinquencies at the earlier part of this show in the United States. And we were talking about it being rather high over there. Apparently, from the information I have here, it's worse in Canada. Incredibly, it's worse. All right. So 35 of small businesses, as I mentioned, 35% of small businesses in the United States couldn't pay rent in the month of June. Canada, 43% of small business owners in Canada couldn't afford to pay their rent. And that's up 4% from May, which was a 39%. Even that is rather high. And in terms of rent increases, 55% of Canadian small business owners say they're required to pay more rent now than 6 months ago. That's understandable. But this goes to show you 43% of small businesses can't or having struggles paying rent for the month of June. This is a number that's not going to go down. Small businesses create a lot of jobs for people, but it just also creates a lot of income for themselves too. This is a fucking disaster that is waiting to happen. That's why when you're asking if things are going to get any worse, yeah, they could get worse. And this is the canary in the coal mine. It could get fucking far, far worse.
So let me hit you with a chart from the States here. Now that you bring that up, this is the NFIB Small Business Sentiment Forward Outlook. Can you even see the bottom of that line? Like they got never. Like it's never been this bad.
Yeah. I love it.
So what do you do if you're a small business? Well, you tighten your belt. You stop CapEx. Stop investing. You slow hiring, much the same way the giants are doing. You start cutting back on discretionary expenses. You hit people with shrinkflation. You reduce the quality of your product. You reduce the quality of your service. You do everything you can to keep your head afloat, and everyone else pays the price, right? But at the end of the day, that's expected behavior. That's incentive-based behavior. If the prices of everything are going up and the outlook on your business is in the tank, well, what are you going to do? You can't keep living la vida loca. You got to make a change. And this is the change people are going to make. That's all.
People are skipping meals, and that's not even la vida loca. That is just basic necessities.
That's la vida locust.
Well said. All right. And for a lot of people, they're probably wondering why they got some money added to their bank account last week. Well, it was the offset for the carbon tax that we all collectively paid. And so people got either direct deposits last week or they got the checks in the mail. Either they just got it or it will be coming in the mail very, very soon. This applies to what I understand to only four provinces in our nation: Alberta, Saskatchewan, Ontario, and Manitoba. And so the breakdown is 1,100 in Saskatchewan, 1,079 in Alberta, $832 in Manitoba, and $745 in Ontario. And that's for a family of four. So yeah, you pay the carbon tax and then we get a little bit back in the end. Is it worth it? I don't know. It's up to you to decide. But if you're wondering where the money came from, it was from the carbon tax that we pay. So yeah, enjoy. It's a party time.
My wife told me she got a deposit for carbon tax. Yeah, nice. I don't know what she did with it though. I'll tell you what she didn't do with it. I didn't get any of it. So,
well,
interesting state of affairs here at CBP headquarters, half of CBP headquarters.
Jordab said he got his money.
Yeah.
But put it right in the corn.
Yeah. If you're married or common law, you probably only get one deposit for the family, right? Pretty sure.
Yeah. It increases the more people that are part of your household unit. So,
yeah, this is really it's the give and take, right? I don't do any of the tax work at the end of the year. And so when the taxes come back, you know, I don't see the 200 or 300, whatever it was. RIP.
You'll never see it.
I have to buy it with my own money, I guess.
But what's yours is hers. What's hers is yours. It's just a shared account. So you may be buying with your own money. It's still half hers, right? So moving on, Saskatchewan. And this is a story that came to me by Nuclear Bitcoiner. He was on our show few weeks back, and in fact,
and at the meetup,
it was good to meet him in person. And thank you for providing this information. There was a news article that came out that says Saskatchewan and Ontario, they're ready to roll out mini nuclear reactors, and these are zero emission reactors, each with enough power to fuel more than 200,000 homes. That's a lot of homes, and they could be deployed by the 2030s. And each of these small nuclear reactors cost between $1 billion and $1.5 billion, and that's a lot of money, but still it provides a lot of sustainable, reliable, and cheap energy to homes. We should be looking at these things as a way to help our energy problems moving forward. It's not going to be easier to deal with energy moving forward, especially if we have electrification of automobiles. There's going to be more demand, more stress on the existing infrastructure. These small nuclear reactors, they can easily help offset or more than offset the added demands that are going to be required over the next little while. So thank you, Nuclear Bitcoiner, for providing this article. Love to see it. I hope they do roll out these mini nuclear reactors in Saskatchewan and Ontario.
He's doing the Lord's work, getting the information out there about these modular reactors. Okay, now here's the real hard hitter for you. What are the odds this thing actually takes off and gets off the ground in either province?
It's a very costly endeavor, so it's you're going to have a lot of political clout behind it. And then on top of that, there seems to be a lot of FUD surrounding nuclear reactors too. So you're going to have to deal with the environmentalists that are going to be picketing outside Queen's Park. Or I don't know, what's Regina? Is that the, I don't know what the fuck it is.
Probably also Queen's Park. I've never been to Saskatchewan. I'm not a big like flat earth or conspiracy guy, but if you told me that Saskatchewan ended up not being a province, I believe you. Manitoba ended up not being a province, I believe you. Like, I've never been to those places, and
I've seen a Rough Riders game on TV, so they kind of exist, right? Come on, man. Don't knock them.
If Ontario does want to do it and they want to pay for it, all I have to say is it better not come through me having to renew my license plate stickers again, because I've been enjoying that extra money.
So somebody said, if I said 200 homes, no, it's 200,000 homes. So if I'm, my apologies if I said the wrong number, it's 200K homes. That's going to be the number. It's actually specifically, it's 240,000. That's the specific number they're providing here. But yeah, that's it for the Canadian side. We can move to the rest of the news. And there's really not much. We could talk about that the European Central Bank, they're now hinting once again at banning Bitcoin. And the reason they're using is an environmental issue and all that jazz. But I'm wondering, is this because there's potential competition here and their fiat environment or fiat system is dying, and this is a way for them to try to eliminate the competition before it really takes off? And just, I'm wondering, what is their motives here? I don't buy what they're saying, though. Like, the fact that they want to ban it, like, come on. Isn't she, Christine Lagarde, isn't she a convicted criminal, felon? I don't know the best way.
Convicted swindler of some kind, yeah.
Okay, so yeah, so there you're getting this information right from the convict over there. So I take that for what it's worth, and I'm not.
These guys don't compete with anyone, Len. They don't compete with anyone on ideas, on products, on anything. They stomp out all competition because they know that they don't have the competency or the willingness, really, to give up even the tiniest bit of that leash that they're using on most of the populace over there, and that's the case for all central banks. I expect that I think I said this a couple weeks ago, I expect that we're entering into a phase of we really got to start getting our ducks in a row as far as privacy, competent arguments, and onboarding as many people as we can to force a political outcome here that's pro Bitcoin. And so meetups like the one on Saturday and other ones we've been to, like, very important. Talking to your friends, family, very important. All that shit, man. It's never been more important than it is right now.
Have you been following a little bit of the saga between Celsius and Voyager? It's kind of now at the tail end. We haven't really talked about it this episode. We've been talking about a lot more last episode. Well, apparently they filed each for bankruptcy. We talked about it at the meeting this past Saturday. They have the same lawyer representing them for the Chapter 11 bankruptcies. And you know what? What's actually very interesting, Corey Clipston mentioned that each of their users should now be hoping and trying to pray that what they have are considered securities, that the fact that they, whatever they invested on their platform, because if they are considered securities, they're going to be one of the first to be paid out. But if they're not considered securities, then it's going to be much lower on the payout list. So the people that have invested, they're in a conundrum, because they want it to be considered a security so they can get paid out much, much higher up in the list. But by doing so, then their investment is going to get potentially wrecked. So what a fucking mess this is. And I'm not sure also if you saw Celsius, their mining operations, they mine 14 Bitcoin for today, which is pretty decent number. I have no way to verify that because it hasn't been, it's not public. It's just all coming from their company. And it's hard to say if this information is truthful or not, considering that Celsius has always said their customers have come number one. And so whatever they say now, it's going to have to take it with in one ear and out the other, because it's probably total bullshit. But yeah, it's a big, big, big problem going on here. And the last thing I see is Three Arrows Capital. They borrowed $2.36 billion from Genesis. And somebody was asking me if there's going to be any impact to Ledin as a result of this. And I propose this question to Mario, and no answer yet. But yeah, this whole thing is still unwinding. And man, oh man, there's going to be a lot of questions that are going to need to be answered going forward. That's just a fucking mess.
I feel good about Ledin. Here's a treat for you from a guy on Twitter. Celsius Network plans to offer customers an option to recover cash at a discount or remain long in crypto.
What does long in crypto mean? Like,
remaining in the Celsius Network while they try and recoup their entire business vis-a-vis loans and you know, other vehicles to remain solvent. A complete joke. Like, it's an absolute farce, man. Like,
the bird in the hand
dog show. Yeah, exactly.
Versus none in the bush.
Yeah, a bird in the hand versus none in the bush. And no bush probably either.
It's fucking just on fire.
Yeah.
And I guess the last story I have is about Elizabeth Warren.
Short one. I love this. It's only been an hour. This is great.
Yeah, we're just going to because you know what? It's been kind of light in the news, but the economy update was just brutal. But anyways, Elizabeth Warren and other lawmakers under the Democratic flag, they're urging the federal regulators through a letter to take action against Bitcoin and crypto mining. And she's once again raising the issue that it uses way too much energy, uses as much energy. The mining in the United States uses as much energy as the city of Houston. But again, she makes absolutely no reference to how much energy is being used in traditional finance, between banks having those towers, between private jets being flown around, money being sent from place to place, nor does she make any mention about the military, of how much energy is being used by their planes, their tanks, their ships, you name it. And that is being used to secure the US dollar as the currency of the world. So she's turning a blind eye to certain things, and she's just looking at Bitcoin and saying, it uses too much energy. Man, it's the same old, same old. She's got to change her tune. And this thing is just, it's now I'm tone deaf to this stuff. I have nothing else to say.
Let me know when her and her compatriots there in the United States stop allowing foreign dignitaries to arrive on private jets. Then we'll talk. But until then, I don't want to hear from Liz or anyone else.
I love when she was photographed or filmed behind coming out of one of her jets. And then she kind of hid behind her staffer.
That was one of the best clips I think I've ever seen. Maybe not ever, but like in the last 5 years, for sure. That's an all-timer. Just pure political stupidity, tomfoolery. It's the lie in one short 15-second video that she wishes she could delete from the internet, much like that one picture of Beyonce that's very unflattering.
Is that the Streisand effect? Is that what it's called?
Yeah. If you try and get rid of something or try and silence something, it just gets more popular. Of course. Crazy.
Yeah. And that's it for the news. We could transition to the Bitcoiner and no coiner of the week. I have a no coiner again, but not a Bitcoiner. How about you?
Just rip it. I have one thing to share here before we go to that. This is recent news here from FX Hedgers. An MSNBC segment has gone completely off the rails. And I don't know if you've seen this, but I've had it queued up here on the side of my screen for a while. I'd like to share it with the public here now.
Please do.
You know, watch it your own.
This walk of shame.
Yeah. Who is this guy here in his underwear? What's going on here?
Did you see the clip though?
Who's this woman and who's this man? Is that Jim Cramer?
No, he was at the New York Stock Exchange. So he was there. He actually opened up shop.
Oh, he has his pants down somewhere else, did he? Okay.
So yeah, the clip is he's running by in the background.
Outstanding stuff. You can actually
watch the clip. But it's being noted that it's a power walk. The coffee may have finally kicked in and he's just ready to drop one. So he's just running to the washroom. Anyway, so yeah, that's it. For this next segment of the show, it's sponsored by Tahini's. There it is. So the great Tahini's, they have, I think now 14 locations open up in Southern Ontario. The last one just opened up in Waterloo this past weekend. And yeah. I was there on Saturday. I sat down in the Oakville location and broke bread with one of our listeners who happened to sit with me. So that was a wonderful experience by everybody. But yes, this part of the show is sponsored by Tahini's. Check them out. Go eat there. If you're not, you're going to be a no coiner of the week.
Listen, we got to use the slogan that I came up with. It doesn't matter what the price is. At Tahini's, it's always a bull market.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because that was 50% off yesterday at the Waterloo location. But it's always a bull market. So get a bull. Yeah, it's filling. Holy cow, is it filling. Anyways, so my no coiner of the week, I'm going to be really quick on this one. Essentially, it's Nancy Pelosi. And the reason being is that $5 million fucking investment by her husband. And clearly there's insider information that apparently it's insider information. I can't guarantee that it's the perception of it. There's insider information and that is being used here to advance their wealth and their how much money they're making. 20,000 shares of NVIDIA were purchased last month, so not too long ago. And this is just at the heels of what's going on with the Senate that's going to be voting on a computer chip manufacturing bill. Also to note, Joey, Mr. Pelosi sold off his stock positions in Visa and Apple.
God damn
Incredible stuff. Apple today just released information that they're going to be slowing down investments. So, wow, how did this person know? The crystal ball,
tell me how Paloma Paul knows when to sell his shares in between getting absolutely piss missiled on the beach with Nance. How does he find the time to do his DD?
And what I want to
know, so many good DD jokes with the Pelosi. You get double D, due diligence. DD is also a designated driver for Paloma Paul. I really gotta spend some time fleshing out these one-liners and just pepper them in over the next couple weeks.
Truly, she, and I'm gonna now include him. He is also a fucking no-coiner. They apparently are not out there to help
allegedly,
to help us. It seems like they're there just for themselves. That's the appearance that they're giving off. Nothing confirmed yet. So yeah, that is why both of them are my no coiner of the week. But I also want to ask one thing. What happened to his DUI charges? Were they simply dropped? I seem to recall that's what happened. I mean, you don't know if there was any conclusion to that.
Same place as the flight logs, buddy.
Just gone. Hopefully there's nothing of that in a laptop. We might get some information that's going to be released by 4chan because what a disaster that's turning up.
If you want this video to stay on YouTube, we better just stop right there.
Hey, man, I'm just alleged stuff here. But yeah, that's it. I hope everybody enjoys the show. We're going to close up shop and get the hell out of here.
I got to move now.
Yes.
So we'll do 10 or 15 with you guys too, as always. Len, the price of Bitcoin in US dollars, sir, is $22,783. Holy shit.
Yeah, we got a bit of a show pump. $29,368 in Canadian dollars. These short shows, we get the pump. We're going to do another one next week. Next week, it's going to be a 5-minute episode. Just going to give you all the heads up.
We'll do as soon as the price goes up, we're cutting bait. I gotta go.
We'll do a series of 5-minute episodes till we get to 69,420, and then we're done.
That's great. So, yeah. God bless the chat again, man. You guys are fucking killing it. This is like the third, fourth, fifth week in a row where it's been like between 25 and 30 people. I am amazed people come and hang out and talk to us and tweet to you guys as well, to each other. It's been awesome. So thank you, Yochi, Derek, Rod, Daniela, Jordan. Who else is in there today? Jeremy. I don't think I've seen Jeremy before. Maybe I have. I forget. He's T-Gem, new here all the time. Narwhal here all the time. Narwhal, you're making some noise on the TFTC stream too. I hear your name on that stream all the time. Boomer, of course. Return Free Risk. Who else we got? Plate Liquor. It goes without saying. Yellow. I can't go all the way up. Alexander Bogues is here too.
Yeah, from Colorado.
Fucking great stuff, man. It's great stuff. We'll see you guys in the after show. If you're on audio, come over and enjoy the YouTube side. You might dig it. Until then, yeah. Take care of yourself.
Take care.